Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today, he is a legend, and you're so young. He is one of the greatest trainers in all of boxing, and he's got his own family foundation giving back by helping kids and families get a fighting chance to do bigger and better things. The great Derek James. How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, well, I'm glad to have you on because, again, not everybody in the world of sports has a family foundation that is actually giving back as much as you give back. You and your family give back to the Dallas-Fort Worth community. I appreciate all you're doing, man. Thank you.
You know, to be honest, it's really my pleasure and honor because growing up, everybody did it for me. People did it for me. The community did it for me. So for me, it's me paying homage and really paying the people back will help me get to where I am in my life.
In fact, you like to say that what kind of made you think about giving back was you were doing a lot of training at the Boys and Girls Club when you were growing up, right?
Yeah, man. I grew up at the Boys and Girls Club, and really, I started when I was 5 years old. And you realize and you see the activities and everything that people are doing with you, and you realize that those things aren't around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those, I would say, amenities that we had, even back in the 70s and 80s, they're not around anymore. And so for me, I'm here to provide those things or those shortcomings that families have and or the kids at the Boys and Girls Club have.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're filling in some of the gaps because, you know, over time, you know, it's like, I don't know if it's because kids have more social media things to do or they're just more closer to home, but they just don't have a lot of places to go, and yet the places to go are out there, and that's where you've stepped in. You and your family foundation have stepped in to kind of help out some of those organizations that are in place and spreading some of the time, talent, and treasure that you've had over the last few years, right?
Right, yeah. And for me, it's like it's very personal because I partnered with several companies also, mm-hmm. which is even better because, like, you have goals and missions and ideas, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I want to focus on, I do things with the Dallas Police Department because, for me, I need the police to know that who we are as a people and this unrealistic idea of whatever it is, crime. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens, but that's not everybody.
Right.
But at the same time, I need the kids to know that these are the people who, you know, who help us out, and they're really here for a reason. And at the same time, to be better police and to be better engaging with the people, you have to have a relationship.
Exactly.
So those kids that you see could want to grow up to be them. In a sense, so I always try to present these situations to where, you know, kids are inspired.
Right.
By everything that they see.
Right. In other words, they don't need to. There's no need to have an adversarial relationship. If both parties can understand each other better, then you work together better, and you look forward to seeing them as opposed to saying, "Uh-oh, we got a situation here." Whether it's one side or the other saying, "Oh, I don't understand them."
And so, for me, if you think about it like this, from a realistic perspective, if the police officers knew your family, mm-hmm. knew you. They're not gonna harm you in a way. They want to help you be better.
Right.
And if you know, and if you have a relationship with the police department, you're less likely to commit crime or be taken in by gangs or whatever the situation might be. I'm not saying that's like everything, but I think at the same time, it's like that if you have that relationship,
right,
and you grow from that, man, that inspires and changes so many kids' lives.
Exactly. And like I said, it's all about understanding each other, and it's the little things that help out. So I love where you're going with this, and I love the fact that that's one of the things that you guys are all about. I also like the fact that, well, a couple of months ago, you had your annual back-to-school drive. Can you talk about how you kind of get back to the kids at the schools on the community level?
Well, what we really do is we sponsor kids in those areas and really the area that I grew up in.
Yeah, Oak Cliff and South Dallas, yeah.
Right, yeah. Which I never went to OW Homes because we moved, but I love the idea of the school and everything that they're doing with the kids. And so We do several things, but let me start out by saying
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a mental health initiative to where we have speakers come in to come talk to the kids and kind of help them with the issues. Because if you think about, so many kids have dysfunction in their life, but at the same time, we expect them to come to school and learn the next day. Or kids are not eating at home because of the financial situation, but we're expecting the best from them. So you have to think about, so my goal is to really kind of help them with the mental health issue, help them in a sense where we provide clothing for the kids. Because if you think about, if I come to a new school and they have to have uniforms,
right?
We're financially challenged.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. So what we do, my foundation does, is we provide the clothing, and we do some programs to help with studying for tests. And so that's just one component. But then we took the kids to see Grambling and Prairie View football game.
Excellent. Off the Cotton Bowl. Yep. At the fair.
Because I'm a big advocate of HBCUs, because I think that the kids need to be able to see themselves in everything that we do. So they chose boys to play football. They chose boys and girls that were in the band. They chose the girls who were cheerleaders. So when they go out there, they can actually see themselves on the field. And so what that does is sets an idea of excellence and something that they can really strive for, so that they can see themselves in each one of those roles.
You know what? I'm going to stop you down right here, because you mentioned about the HBCUs. You guys provided scholarships to some kids,
right,
who grew up here in South Oak Cliff and in South,
right,
Dallas, and some of the schools they get to attend to. I'm going to go ahead and shout them out for you. You got a HBCU scholarship recipient named Dalen Arredondo from H. Grady Spruce. He went to Southern. You got Lewis Rainey, FAMU. He went to Marvin E. Robinson School, DISD, majored in computer science. Deja Howard from DeSoto. She's going to Southern University on that HBCU scholarship provided by the Derek James Family Foundation. You got Eric Bolden Jr. from Lancaster. He's going to Paul Quinn. He's studying management. You got Patrick Henry Worthy III from Carter High School, studying business management over at PVAMU, Prairie View A&M.
Right.
And also going to Prairie View, he's got Taryn Watkins from Parish Episcopal. And again, they're all proud recipients of the Derek James Family Foundation HBCU scholarship. How did you come up with that idea? Because I think it's so on point.
So what happened is that when I was younger and I was a kid, right,
mm-hmm,
I did a college scholarship at my church. Like, I was like 21, 22. But then I thought about it, like, I wanted to get back involved from that perspective to start helping more kids. And so what happened is a lot of my best friends went to Southern University. So,
mm-hmm,
so each one of these colleges was chosen specifically for a reason. So because all of my buddies went to Southern, I chose Southern University.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is we had so many applicants from Southern and so many applicants from Prairie View that we added, because initially was supposed to be 5 scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
But because there were so many applicants from Southern and so many applicants from Prairie View, we chose to choose a boy and a girl.
Okay.
But so Southern, my buddies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Prairie View is one of the ladies who helped with my foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's specific to her and her school.
Right.
The other young lady that works with us, she, Shamika, she went to FAMU.
Mm-hmm.
So we chose
Florida A&M. Yep.
Yeah. Then we chose Paul Quinn because I am from Dallas and I can't overlook the school that's here in my city.
That's right.
And so, and then we had another one, which was Wiley College, but nobody else, no one applied to the Wiley College.
Mm-hmm.
And Wiley is because my family's from Marshall, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose that. So it was something near and dear to my heart.
You brought up Marshall, Texas. Let me just dive into this right quick. That's the home of one of the greatest boxers of all time, George Foreman. Did that have any influence on why you became a boxer and then became one of the greatest trainers in the world, the fact that your family's from the same town as George Foreman?
No, really, I didn't even, I you know, Muhammad Ali was the guy. So
okay, Ali. Mm-hmm.
No, it didn't have an effect on me. But it was kind of cool when you grow up and you know that, because everything is about association.
Right? Yeah.
Before you get your own personal success, mm-hmm. it's about association. Mm-hmm. The association is that you can mentally project, if that guy can do it being from here, I can do it also.
Exactly.
So that was something that, you know, it's always an inspiration. And like I talked to George's younger brother like 2 or 3 days ago. So It's pretty funny. But yeah, we, it's just all about trying to inspire each other, trying to motivate each other, and trying to kind of get the kids. So for me, like the kids, I don't have a degree. But I didn't go to college. I didn't finish because boxing, turned pro. But my goal is to kind of help more kids and try to help kids really reach their full potential. So what we do with the, because we have so many components, we have the college scholarship, HBCU scholarships. We have the mental health component. Mm-hmm. We sponsor Ruby Holmes Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the athlete, really it's like, it's called Access to Elite. And so that's the component that works with sports and athleticism and tutoring. Because if you think about, the only thing that truly separates us from anybody else is we don't have the access,
right,
to become elite,
right?
So let me
break it down for a lot of people, because a lot of people, you know, in different communities, they might have access to baseball because their parents or their family have enough money to send them to the little baseball things, or they might be able to do some football because they are able to afford to go to these football camps. It's all about access. Sometimes people take it for granted that they could just have their kids go do something because they can afford it. Well, not everybody can afford it, but they still enjoy it and maybe are talented enough to pursue it and be actually really good at it. And you're providing some of those opportunities.
Access to Elite is what it's called. That's the component within the foundation. Because it's really called Derrick James Family Foundation Access to Elite.
Mm-hmm.
But so what we do, like I said, is, and that's from an educational perspective, what we do from a mental health perspective, everything is about reaching a kid from where they are. And at the same time, you know, giving them access to become elite.
Exactly. We're talking with Derrick James, one of the greatest trainers in the world. In fact, named the best trainer in the world in 2022. Derrick James Family Foundation, created to give youth and families in North Texas a fighting chance, a successful future, by providing resources to remove obstacles that limit certain opportunities. And again, you got so many different causes. You got so many. I mean, you and your wife, let's shout out to the crew, because everybody has a nice role in coming up with a different, because this is a total foundation. It's not just limited to one particular thing. Can you talk about your organization a little bit with your family? Because it's true family for real.
Right. So really what happens is, I had been doing the work for like 20-something years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so growing up in the Boys and Girls Club, doing Christmas, doing all these other things, you know, and I do things like that doing things like that all the time.
Sure.
But I wanted to give my daughters and my son something to aspire to and something to kind of, you know,
mm-hmm.
look at, say, this is what we should be doing in the community.
Right.
This is like, I learned how to give back from my mother giving back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what's funny about it is I saw my mother give back, but I never saw an athlete give back until, you may remember this, Spud Webb used to have an All-Star game.
Yes. I was MC of those games. I was the
at the reunion.
Right.
And so I remember I grew up at the Boys Club. So he grew up at a Boys Club in Turnkey. So they would always have us out at those games. So you say, okay, this is what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you're supposed to do it.
Exactly.
So you're supposed to give back. My mother had already taught me from a community perspective, but to see somebody who gets to a high level and give back is a really big deal. And so, I mean, I watched it. And I watched him, and I watched my mother, And so you're like, okay, that's what we're supposed to do, so we're going to do it. And it's just getting inspiration and motivation from everywhere and everybody.
Exactly. There's no price on how good you feel by helping others and giving back. And let's shout out again Spud Webb and his crew and his foundation, because they started that thing way back in the day, like you said, where right. he were getting all right. these NBA players to play in a summertime charity All-Star game. He'd have Magic Johnson. He'd have, I mean, the best of the best, all the biggest yeah. names. They were always playing a Spud's game. In fact, Spud's game, Magic's game in L.A., and Larry Bird's game in Indiana were the only three sanctioned games by the NBA to give back to charity. And as you mentioned, Spud grew up in the Boys and Girls Club, and that's why he wanted to give back. And it trickled down to you because you were a part of the Boys and Girls Club, and you got to go to the right. games, and you're like, wow, and this is how you give back. This is the way it's done. So I love, because you know what? I love the way you're thinking, because that's what's going to happen with some of these kids who are already participating in the opportunities that you're providing with your family foundation.
Yeah, I mean, I told them that also. I said that I want to see you guys come back and help all the other kids. That's what we're here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're here for the next generation and then the next generation. So let's hope that it rubs off and they kind of see what it is, and you know, and they understand it.
Exactly. And again, your family foundation does so many different things. We haven't even gotten into, you know, the holidays. When the holidays right. come, you guys do something special as well. Can you get into some of that?
Yeah, we do. Well, for the holidays, what we do a lot of things with Roland Parrish, which is a good brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do some things with him. And also we just provide meals, and we do so many meals for OW Homes, for the kids there, mm-hmm. or kids at the Boys and Girls Club. So it's like so many different spaces. But what happens now, we're partnering also with the Dallas Police Department and doing some things with them also for Christmas. So mm-hmm. looking forward to that, because I think that I have my own personal agenda with the police department, you know. So so the more and more we work with them, the more and more they get involved, and they do it. The people do it really because I'm with them.
Yeah.
And they do it for the love. They do it for, we did something for the breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And you really realize, like, they're really doing this for love. They're really doing it not because it's an extra job, this or that. They're doing it because they love and they have the passion. So that's the part about it that I really love, and that you get to see the people giving back and you understand the people from that perspective.
Derek, you've got a big, big idea, a plan for a community center. Can you talk a little bit about your big dream of the community center capital campaign? This you know, multi-purpose facility that you're in the works, that you're planning this thing out?
Well, yeah, that's really a big dream and goal of mine. But, you know, I think that what happens is it's going to take a while, you know, mm-hmm. but we're still working and we're still focused on doing all the other things that can make that other thing happen. So, I mean, it's like, and we want the community center. I think that that's a goal and a passion of mine. I think that to be a center stone of a community, to where everybody comes in, mm-hmm. have all the celebrities come in, if they're coming in town, and just to see the kids, because it's all about the kids. And so it's all about giving back. So to be able to get a facility where we can help the kids and provide that access to at least those sporting events, the educational component, mental health component. And so everything we do to do that will be a dream.
Exactly. The long-term vision, offering an educational sports program, and including computer lab, the gym, basketball right. courts, counseling areas, swimming pool, and more, comprehensive right. services, opportunities, resources to assist young people and their families. I mean, it's put it like this. The dream never happens until you start a plan, and you guys have got a plan in place. And I just love the way you're thinking big and looking at the opportunities to, like I said, actually give back and give the opportunities for people who don't have the opportunity naturally or through their own families to get involved right. and do these kind of things. So I think it's a nice bridge opportunity that you're putting together here. And for those who don't know, again, Derek, you've been in the boxing world forever. And I just got to sidetrack this for a minute, because one of your biggest name clients or boxers is the great Earl Spence Jr. Can you, right now. Can you talk about some of the names you've been working with over the past few years and how you actually went from boxer to trainer? I'm only sidestepping this because you deserve your props, because you're being great at your career allowed you to have the opportunity to create the foundation. That's why I want everybody to know how great you are.
But I'm gonna go back even further than that. What got me here was not the boxing. What got me here was my willingness to give back.
Because what happens
is, I have a lot of kids that I work with, Luke, brother named Cole, Connor Horowitz, and I would mentor them on certain aspects, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mentally. And I said, man, I mean so much to these kids over here. I got to start helping the kids in the community also.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first boxers that I said I wanted to give back boxing. So the first boxers that I gave back to was Errol and this other kid named Chris Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to get to who I am now was all about me giving back. Then the boxing, right? Then with more boxing, more giving back. So all of it is kind of one hand washing the other. So I work with Jermell Charlo mm-hmm. to help him become undisputed champ of the world. Work with Andy Joshua for two fights. I'm working with Ryan Garcia right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with Frank Martin. So, you know, mm-hmm. so I've worked with several great fighters. And, you know, who knows? I mean, I got to have another big deal coming up. We'll see how it works out in the next couple of weeks. We're supposed to hear something, but I'll let you know about that also. But
that'll also work. Yeah. Things are going very well. Can you talk about how much you've traveled all over the world? Because we kind of talked about this the last time about a year ago we had you on the show. And you were talking about how, you know, your career has allowed you to travel the entire world. Can you talk about a couple of places that you thought you'd never, ever go? And then there you were.
Well, I think I never thought about Italy at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never thought about like just traveling throughout. Italy was one of the places I just never thought about. I mean, I go to London a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many other places, but just to travel on and really, and this is all from boxing. This is all from going up from the Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah.
Because initially, when I went, I made the USA boxing team when I was 15 years old. The Boys and Girls Club would pay for my trips
mm-hmm.
and finance all my trips until I got on the USA level. Then it was different. But then, you know, the Olympic Committee were paying for everything. But if you think about it, it's all about the people. That's why I never forget the people who helped me get to where I am, because I understand what the Boys and Girls Club did for me. I understand it's my job to help other people in the community and also the kids at the club now to you know, so that's what it's all about, giving back. That's why.
It really is. And you've been honored this past summer, talking about giving back. Derrick James Family Foundation honored to be featured in the Children's Health Annual Report. And you guys are now partnering with them through their Endowment for Pediatric Mental Health. Can you talk about that big moment? Because, again, that's showing the work that you're doing is being recognized.
And with that being said, it's something that I could have never imagined doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my wife is she was a counselor in elementary school, middle school. So really, the mental health component was something that we really shared, but it was something more focused on her, because she sees like that how much kids need help from, you know, mental health.
Yeah.
And to partner up with them is really a big deal, because we started and we did a deal with them with the foundation, and we did something that goes on forever. We contribute to them forever, and we're part of this. The words are missing. Let me see. But we have an endowment.
Yeah.
And our family endowment goes on into perpetuity, so it goes on forever. So, and that's what it is. So we keep contributing to that. We keep contributing to our college scholarship. We keep contributing to the kids in the community. But the thing with Children's Medical is so great, because you know, they built another extension in Oak Cliff at Redbird Mall.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's really within, that's really right in the heart of the community.
Exactly.
So that's where, and it's amazing because, you know, they're building up that area, and that's what we really want to do to help those kids in that area so they don't have to really leave their community to go get the help that they need.
Let me read the statement from Children's Medical Center Foundation, because it's absolutely a testament to the great work you guys are doing. It says, quote, "The Derrick James Family Foundation has made a monumental impact on our community through the Derrick James Family Foundation Endowment for Pediatric Mental Health. This visionary initiative addresses a critical need for comprehensive, high quality, and accessible mental health services for children in all areas of Dallas, but especially in underserved communities like Oak Cliff. The endowment not only fills a significant gap in pediatric mental health care, but it also stands as a testament to the power of philanthropy in effecting meaningful change and creating a brighter, healthier future for all. By prioritizing the mental well-being of our youngest citizens, the Derrick James Family Foundation demonstrates extraordinary leadership and compassion. Children's Health is immensely proud to be a partner in this transformative endeavor. Together, we are working to enhance the health and lives of children growing up in DFW, ensuring that every child has the opportunity to thrive with the support they need." That is just, like I said, it speaks for itself. I mean,
right, don't.
It just speaks for itself. I know you're proud, man. Yeah.
Right. They said, that's amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's basically explaining what you're doing. And mental wellness is so big, and I think part of it, and a lot of people are finding this out, is because unlike when we were growing up, the kids today, Gen Z and younger, they have all the social media right at their fingertips. Right. And so as a parent or as a household, if you're raising kids at all, you've got to compete with that. You've got to let them know some of that stuff ain't true. Some of that's bullies. Sometimes that's bots. Sometimes that's just people trolling, and you cannot let likes and clicks be the most important thing in your life. And you cannot let right. that depress you, or you cannot be, you know, you just cannot just go down that path all by yourself and just assume that that's what the world really is, because there's too many things competing with the kids' attentions nowadays. Have you noticed that? Because especially when the pandemic happened, because all kids were doing was virtual learning. Well, they were on their own. They couldn't get out to the community centers. They couldn't get out to the Boys and Girls Club. They were just in their rooms. And then they go online and they just read or see some of the craziest things, and they didn't know what to think.
You know, for me, what's funny is when I started getting to a high level of boxing and I started trademarking things, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things was people would always kind of, you know how people talk. They come at you. They come at you real ugly.
Oh yeah,
and they will say things to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I trademarked, "I am my greatest competition."
Ah, right? That's excellent.
Because what happened is that Errol was fighting Mikey Garcia,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "So I know you're a great trainer. So what do you think about going up against, you know, his brother Robert Garcia?" I said, "Well, first of all, I'm my greatest competition." And so when I said it, I just was saying it in passing. And a guy contacted me and said, "Hey, man, I saw this video and you said something that I love." I said, "What?" He said, "I'm a greatest competition." And he said, "Man, I'm going to make a T-shirt of that." I said, "Nope." I went back and listened to the interview and I called my lawyer and like, "Boop, I'm a greatest competition." But what happens is you really realize that, and I tell kids this all the time, social media is not really real. You are your greatest competition. Don't focus on anybody else.
Yeah.
Right? Don't focus on anybody else. Focus on you. And by focusing on you, everything else will be okay.
Those are the wisest words. Yeah.
I think that what happens is, you know, we can't, because people believe that they have real relationships with people on social media.
Mm-mm.
And
yeah.
Unless you're calling them and talking to them, it's not really real, but it's hard for them to decipher. Like you said, it could be a bot, it could be this.
Yeah.
You don't even really, so, and they're comfortable with these situations that are not even real because it's not most likely you've been in a room where you see kids talking to each other and they're texting and they're in the same room.
Mm-hmm. And that's crazy. It's like, talk to each other. Why are you texting each other? You're right in the same room. But like you said, it's a different day. And that's why I'm glad you guys have stepped up. And speaking of stepping up, you've got a golf tournament at Top Golf coming up. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's important for everybody who want to get involved with some of the things you guys have been doing and to show their support of the Derrick James Family Foundation.
Yes, well, we what's funny is I have a client and he suggested, man, you should probably do a golf tournament or do a Top Golf event. I said, well, you know, we'll do the Top Golf first and then we'll lead into the golf tournament. But it's really something. And for me, I always believe in creating a business atmosphere, right? To where this guy's in real estate, this guy's a lawyer, this guy's in banking, this guy, and everybody's in the room together and they can talk about something, maybe something come of that.
Right.
But for me generally, it's all about the kids. It's all about like raising funds and helping the kids and really getting everybody out to have a good time at the same time. So I'm looking forward to having, you know, you as an MC.
I would definitely be there, yeah.
Coming out. We got several other people coming out, and it's just all about everybody having fun and having a good time and just getting involved.
And where can people find more information? At the website? Go ahead and say the website for everybody.
The website is DerrickJamesFamilyFoundation.com, or you can go on Instagram as Derrick James Family Foundation, DERRICK, not Derrick, Derrick James.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really go to the website and or on Instagram page. We're really keeping traction with that. So just to keep everybody abreast of what we're doing and everything.
Yes, yeah, it's a very nice website. Again, it's the Derrick James Family Foundation.org, and you can check out all the things they've been doing, the things they got coming up, including this great golf tournament. Like I said, if you wanted to participate in it, donate to it, partner with them. And I can't say it enough. The things that you've been doing and been able to accomplish in the last couple of years of having this foundation has been amazing. Let me recite it once again for those who don't know. Some of the things you've accomplished just over the last calendar year, providing over 500 clear backpacks to students in the Dallas areas, provide 6 local high school seniors college scholarships, full 4-year scholarships, established a $50,000 pediatric mental hospital endowment with Children's Health Dallas, provide mental health speakers to approximately 200 male students at O.W. Holmes Middle School to discuss the importance of mental health, and more and more and more, let alone the holiday give backs, the back to school programs, the entire 9 yards. Again, Derrick James, thank you again for joining us and much success. And I will be seeing you at that golf tournament.
Thank you very much, Chris. I really do appreciate you, and I appreciate just everybody in the city and everything they're doing and everybody that helped me. It's all about inspiration. And Spud.
Yes, yes.
I'm inspired, brother. You inspire me. You inspire me.
We're going to make sure Spud knows.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Derrick.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Joining us right now is Norma Candelaria of the American Heart Association in Dallas, and neurologist Dr. Harita Bhuva of the American Stroke Association and Medical City Plano. And we're all going to be talking about World Stroke Day. World Stroke Day is celebrated globally on October 29th every year. This year, the American Stroke Association, a division of the American Heart Association, is highlighting the importance of knowing the stroke warning signs and secondary stroke prevention. Experts from the North Texas teams at America's Stroke Association and Medical City Healthcare are working together to end strokes. To help us talk about the reduction of our risk to stroke and how they are impacting the DFW community, again, we got Ms. Norma and we got Dr. Bhuva. How are you guys doing, both of you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Well, yes, thank you.
Well, I'm so glad you're here to join us again because you're enlightening everybody about strokes, because strokes happen, and they can be prevented or they can be reduced. And so we want to get into some of that. First of all, stroke is the number 5 leading cause of death and a leading cause of serious long-term disability in the United States, despite stroke being largely preventable, treatable, and beatable. Dr. Bhuva. Who can stroke happen to in particular?
Strokes can happen to anyone at any age. In fact, globally, about 1 in 4 adults over the age of 25 will have a stroke in their lifetime. And in our practice, we often see young people with strokes. Sometimes the mechanism and the reason is slightly different. It might be because of an injury or a visit to a chiropractor that resulted in a blood vessel being impacted. But yes, we see strokes in people of all ages.
This is so interesting because literally a couple of years ago, a very good friend of mine who was having a Father's Day dinner at his family's house walked out on the sidewalk and had a stroke. And they rushed him to the hospital. They expected him to be in the hospital, 3 or 4 weeks, 5 weeks. He came out within 2 weeks, and he was completely fine. In other words, I think he was one of the lucky ones. Can you talk about, Dr. Bhuva, about how strokes can be various degrees or how you just never know when it might happen and how quick reaction might help things out?
Yes, that's very important. So recognizing strokes is key because all the stroke treatments that are available are very time sensitive. So brain cells die very quickly. And so anytime you have something that's impacting blood flow to a part of the brain, the key is to restore that blood flow as quickly as possible to decrease the amount of brain cells that die. Because once they die, it's not reversible. And sometimes even like you're describing patients, if they come to us very quickly, we have different treatments like giving a clot busting medicine. Again, that clot busting medicine can only be used up to 4.5 hours after stroke symptoms have started. And then secondly, we have treatments now where we can go in from the inside of the blood vessels to take a clot out if they're in a large blood vessel. And we know that when people get those kinds of treatments, their chances of recovering, getting back to having a functional recovery where they are able to go back to doing the things they used to do are much, much higher. So patients with strokes overall do better nowadays. But the key thing and the thing that we really, really emphasize is recognizing the signs and symptoms of a stroke so that you can get to the hospital on time, calling 911 to get you to the right place to get treatment rapidly. And I can talk about some of the signs and symptoms of stroke. One of the acronyms that we use, the AHA uses, is called FAST.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is what we use to educate people. And it's an easy way for, you know, children, and adults, everyone to remember what you're looking out for when we're talking about stroke. So the FAST acronym, the F stands for face. So if you think someone's having a stroke, you ask them to smile or you look at their face and see if there's any asymmetries, one side droopier, one side looking different. The A stands for arms. You ask them to hold up both of their arms and see. Sometimes it's going to be very obvious, like they can't lift up one arm. Other times it'll be like they lift them both up, but one starts, you know, drooping down and they can't hold it together. The S stands for speech, meaning you ask them to, you know, ask them a question, listen to them talking. There's two different kinds of things we're looking for there. One is slurred speech, where if their words don't sound correct. Or second is if there's any trouble producing speech or they're saying wrong words, etc. And if you see any of those signs, T stands for time, meaning it is time to call in, call 911, get to the right place so that you can actually get help for your stroke.
Okay, so time is of the essence. What's the time frame where you really need to get something done? In other words, you know, there's a window, and I'm sure it varies, but you know, generally speaking, you know, you want time is of the essence.
Yes. So faster, the better, exactly like I said. So every minute, there's 2 million brain cells dying. So if a patient comes into the hospital with a stroke, we have some very tight timelines we follow to get them these medicines and to get them to our angio suite where we do this procedure where we take the clot out. So all of those are very time critical. And so to your point, you cannot get the clot busting medicine of after 4.5 hours from the symptom onset, and that treatment where we take the clot out, that is something that can be done up to 24 hours. But again, patients that have that sooner, the sooner we restore blood flow to your brain, the better you're going to do.
Can you talk again about the symptoms of a stroke? Because sometimes, you know, somebody might think, oh, she just passed out, or he just passed out, or he fainted. Can you talk about how to determine a stroke is a stroke?
Yeah, and it's good to err on the side of getting evaluation if you think someone's having a stroke, because it is such a critical and time-sensitive disease. So yes, if someone passes out and it's, you know, they wake up and they're not acting themselves, or they're not waking up, yes, those are all things that I would call 911 for to get an evaluation. That is something that the experts can differentiate. But yes, the signs that are things that can be sometimes subtle and we ask people to look out for are the FAST, which is the face asymmetry, the mm-hmm. armness, the speech difficulty, and then the time. But there can be your brain is very complex. So depending on what part you're having a stroke in, the signs and symptoms are different. But to find a way to easily educate people, we've honed in on the most common things, and that's where the acronym comes from.
You are a wealth of information, Dr. Bhuva, and that's why I'm so glad you're here with us, because again, strokes happen to so many people, and quite a few of the strokes are preventable. Can you talk about, again, for those who don't know, what are some of the things that can prevent strokes? What are some of the things you can do to make sure that you or someone that you care about, family member or friend, can avoid a stroke or a significant stroke?
Yes. So what we talk about is decreasing your risk of stroke. And the things that increase your risk of stroke are having high blood pressure. So making sure you have a good, you have a primary care doctor that you see frequently. Mm-hmm. They monitor your blood pressure, your cholesterol. The other things that you can do is having a healthy diet. And when we refer to a healthy diet, we're talking about something that's, you know, as close to what we call a Mediterranean diet. So mm-hmm. Not a lot of red meat, more fruits and vegetables, and regular physical activity. So we know that exercise for 30 to 40 minutes, 3 times a week, has a big impact on stroke risk. Of course, smoking is one of the biggest risks for strokes, and it has a impact on the blood vessels in terms of hardening them in the brain and the heart. And so that is a very clear sign. And then there's other things like atrial fibrillation, which are more nuanced. And so mainly going to the doctor regularly to make sure that you are getting evaluated for high blood pressure, cholesterol, et cetera, is important.
In other words, when you get your physicals, no matter what your age is, just make sure that the doctor looks into situations regarding possible strokes. In other words, to be evaluated to make sure that you're not in line with something that like that might happen, right?
Exactly.
With that being said, you are a doctor, Dr. Bhuva. What made you want to be the type of doctor? In other words, you're a doctor that, you're a neurologist. What made you want to specialize in strokes in particular? Was there a story there?
So from a very young age, I was just fascinated by the brain, and I wanted to do something where I could make an impact on people with brain injuries, brain difficulties. And I didn't know about all these nuanced stroke treatments. In fact, many of the treatments that we do right now, the thrombectomies, didn't even come on board, like they didn't become mainstream until I was well into my, medical school and training.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just something I've always found fascinating. And I didn't choose this field because of that. But since I have chosen this, as many of you guys probably have, I have had family members. In fact, my father had a pretty bad stroke. So I have been impacted personally by stroke, which makes it even more meaningful for me mm-hmm. to do and help people.
What is the youngest age of someone you've had to treat for stroke? In other words, it could happen to anyone, but you mentioned like kids or young adults. Give me an age of someone when you were like completely surprised that had a stroke, but you knew that they were susceptible.
Yeah. So doing what I do, I'm not usually surprised, and I do not treat kids, but we see, teenagers like 19-year-olds with, and my colleagues who do treat kids see children like, 7 years old, et cetera, with strokes. The risk factors and the mechanism or the reason for strokes in younger people is often different than those that are older. It's, different things like an injury to a blood vessel. Like I said earlier, something called a dissection, which is a tear in an artery that causes you to form a clot. So it's more because of those kinds of things rather than the traditional risk factors of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking. Those things take a while to impact your blood vessels. So in young people, and that's the other tricky part, it's when you're young, you think those things are not going to impact you, but they are making a difference, and it's going to catch up to the damage as far as your blood vessels go.
When you suffer a stroke, or when someone suffers a stroke, when they recover, I'm trying to figure out what are some of the signs that you might have an easier recovery? Is it the physical, being in physical, better physical condition, or is it catching it in time, or is it the age of the individual that has a stroke? In other words, I was completely surprised, just to keep it honest, I was completely surprised when my friend who had this stroke, he was in his late 60s. He had this stroke and he recovered completely so fast. Whereas, I've known some other people who have had a stroke, and like you said, they had to do a big rehab process, and then like maybe one side of their body didn't fully recover. I'm just trying to differentiate between the different types of strokes, and if there's a commonality, whether it's age or the how healthy you are, and or how quickly they find you and take you to the hospital.
You exactly hit all of the factors that are important in determining what we call your functional outcome after a stroke. So yes, age is important. Younger people tend to do better after a stroke. And then yes, your overall physical condition, your functioning before the stroke matters. And most importantly now is, yes, how quickly you got to the hospital and got treatment. Because once the brain tissue has died, let's say you developed some symptoms yesterday evening and you decided that, hey, I'm just going to see if this arm feels a little bit weak, but let me go to bed and see if it gets better. Mm-hmm. You wake up the next day and that brain tissue has died. When you come into the hospital, we may not be able to restore blood flow and save that amount of brain tissue. So that patient is going to do much worse than someone who came in that evening when the symptoms started and we opened up that blood vessel. So yes, many factors play into the how you're going to do. A lot of those things are, long-term, and some genetic things that predispose you to high blood pressure, cholesterol. But the thing that we can all control is recognizing the signs and symptoms of stroke and then getting to a hospital on time.
Exactly. If you're the person having the stroke, what are some of the symptoms that happen to you? In other words, you painted a pretty good picture earlier when you were saying you asked them, can they raise their arms or what the condition of their face looks like. If you're actually going through the stroke yourself, what are some of the things that you can and cannot do, and how can you remain calm, or describe the symptoms or what you're dealing with if you're the person having the stroke?
Yeah, so it is, again, those same things, like if you're feeling like your speech is affected or you feel weaker on one side. Now, the tricky part here is that your brain is fascinating. And so strokes that affect the right side of your brain, there is a very specific phenomenon, and it's kind of a safety thing in nature, but sometimes you have what's called neglect. And so your brain kind of fights you in recognizing that you're having a stroke, which is why it's important for those around you to do that. So strokes on the right side of the brain, you might not realize that you're having a stroke.
I see. In other words, you're not unconscious necessarily unless you were to hit your head when you fell down.
Yeah. And a lot of that's another important distinction. Majority of strokes do not involve loss of consciousness. So when we're talking about blockage type strokes, the vast majority of strokes, you do not lose consciousness from the very beginning.
This is just fascinating information. And Norma, I didn't forget about you. I'm just having this great conversation with Dr. Buva, and she's breaking this thing down so well. But I do want to have some input from you because, you know, you're with the American Heart Association. And what are some of the ways the American Stroke Association, a division of the American Heart Association, is affecting lives right here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex? What are some of the things that the American Stroke Association is affecting right here in Dallas-Fort Worth?
Thank you. So even though World Stroke Day is on October 29th, we focus on stroke prevention and education year-round here on our community impact team. Mm-hmm. And we're very lucky to work very closely with Medical City on our Together to End Stroke initiative. And there are a number of ways that our community impact team has been working on this in North Texas. First of all, I'm really focusing on access. So I think two of the very big areas that we see that we're able to assist with is providing access to blood pressure measurements and education, mm-hmm. as well as nutrition access. In the area of blood pressure, we worked with several clinics across North Texas, mainly federally qualified health centers, but also a few other types of clinics as well, to place hypertension kits. And these kits consist of a blood pressure cuff, a small portable one that you can probably buy at a pharmacy, mm-hmm. along with a weight scale, a pill box for any sort of medication, and then a few educational resources. We work with these clinics so that they can provide these resources to anyone that is diagnosed with high blood pressure so that they can monitor their numbers at home. We know that those numbers are something that can change rapidly, especially in those hypertension patients. So we want to make sure that they have access to those materials and also know what to do if the numbers seem off. In addition to that, we also have worked with several community organizations, including 10 Dallas County senior centers and several libraries. And we're really focused on some of the rural areas for this initiative. Mm-hmm. But we are placing hypertension kiosks. So if you go to a pharmacy, you're probably familiar with that blood pressure machine that you can sit down and take your blood pressure.
Right.
Yes. Yes. So we're actually placing those in areas where they might be medical deserts. So somewhere where there's not a lot of places, there's maybe not a lot of doctors, not a lot of places where people can get their blood pressure taken. Mm-hmm. And also places where we know that there might be people that have, you know, some hesitancy to go to the doctor for one reason or the other, or maybe they just don't have access to care. So we want to make sure that we're letting them know about this very important number. Some people know that blood pressure is frequently called the silent killer because often people don't know that they have a blood pressure issue until it's too late and they're in the emergency room being diagnosed with high blood pressure. So we want to make sure that these communities are able to take their blood pressure measurement. We've also collaborated with several nursing schools and different universities in the area to help us place students that are in training to become nurses or doctors or anything like that so that they can educate these individuals that are coming through senior centers, community centers, libraries, and talk to them about blood pressure. What is high blood pressure? What do they need to do if they're experiencing high blood pressure? And then really letting them know about, you know, the ranges of what they need to do. Maybe it's call 911. Maybe it's go to your doctor. Maybe it's just monitor it. Let's take it again and see if maybe it was just the traffic in DFW that made it be a little bit high. So that's some of what we're doing for blood pressure. But we also are doing a lot of work related to nutrition access. Mm-hmm. I think that we've all heard people talking about how expensive groceries are. And we know that there are people that, you know, when they're struggling to buy or access food, they have to sacrifice quality. And unfortunately, sometimes they do have to skip meals. The results are connected to a number of health-related issues, everything from heart disease to diabetes to stroke. And all of those factors kind of run together. So we want to make sure that we're helping tackle that. The Stroke Association has been working across North Texas to increase food access. And we've been doing this by establishing healthy food outlets.
Excellent.
So everything from
excellent.
Yes, everything from food pantries to food pods, even just providing capacity so that organizations have a refrigerator so that they're not just giving out the items that don't need to be refrigerated. And then really helping them implement nutrition standards so that we're really making sure that, you know, people are coming in to get food, but we're really saying, hey, why don't you try some of this too? Because it's a healthier option. In our most recent effort with the support of Medical City Healthcare, we were able to open a self-select pantry at a school in Fort Worth, and we're working with them on a few other efforts up in Collin County to open some of those food access points.
I love this because you're catching people to get them healthy so they won't be susceptible to the strokes and the different heart situations.
Exactly. We're trying to start them early. So, you know, I think this is something that really does, when it comes to the food pantries, impact the entire family. And just kind of sticking to catching them early.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a program that is in some of our schools. It's called the Kids Heart Challenge. And I think some of us, when we think back to when we were young and in school, we remember that they had hoops for heart and jump rope for heart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this Kid Heart Challenge is, you know, a similar program, but it really focuses on education. So we're really trying to educate students about healthy or their risk factors, healthy behaviors, and making sure that they're really eating healthy, doing physical activity,
mm-hmm.
and even educating them on things like the FAST acronym. I actually just heard from one of our Kids Heart Challenge team members about a second grader in East Texas that called 911 when she noticed that her mom was experiencing some of the signs and symptoms that we learned about earlier. So it's really nice to know that we're trying to make it as easy as possible to know what those symptoms are. We even released an acronym in Spanish recently. It's RAPIDO.
Yeah.
So anybody in the Spanish-speaking community can also understand those symptoms, which, you know, it's in Spanish, but it's basically going over those same pieces and breaking it down a little bit differently.
That is fantastic. And I love the Kids Heart Challenge in the schools. I talked to one of the principals last year around this time about that, and it's so exceptional. You know, kids love a challenge, but I like the fact that you're letting them understand, and what do you say, the prevention starts at 5, not at age 50, 5 years old, not 50 years old.
Yes, exactly. And we do have many resources on our site. If anybody's interested in looking, we have our stroke.org site where we have information in English and Spanish.
That is fantastic. Again, the October 29th is World Stroke Day, and people need to be aware and be involved. And I cannot thank you guys enough for sharing all of your information and your knowledge. And Marcia, Norma, is there anything else you want to make sure everybody knows, the websites, the whole nine yards, where people can find out what they need to do?
I think the main thing is we do want to make sure that the community understands the warning signs. They know that stroke is something that everyone should be able to recognize, you know those signs that they need to recognize. Mm-hmm. And we just really encourage everyone to go to our website, stroke.org. There's also heart.org, but we have most of our resources translated to English and Spanish. And we're just looking forward to getting that out to the community.
Dr. Bufa, is there anything you'd like to leave as well with anybody?
No, I just take advantage of all of the awesome efforts that the American Heart Association and American Stroke Association is doing in the area. And you may have heard this segment today, and then teach your loved ones, teach your kids about the signs and symptoms of stroke, because that's where you know, kids are around grandparents and they see symptoms, and that's where we can really make an impact.
Exactly. I want to thank you both for joining us, and thank you all for listening to Us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.